June 28, 2023. It's a Wife for Pedro show. Why for Pedro Show, happy Wednesday. Start off with John Coltrane with a live excerpt from November 22, 1962. His version of the Inchworm. And then Steve Dawson, if I gotta move, because of them Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got with me. Brother Steve Dawson, hello. Welcome aboard.
Yeah.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be spieling with you. Now, I want to find out about your journey through music, so please bring your earliest musical recollection.
I mean, I was a kid, and like most kids, I guess my age, my generation, I did see Kiss in the 1970s.
No, but the question is your earliest. The question is, what's your
earliest memory?
I've had cats on the show that talk about being still in their ma and hearing kick drum and shit.
Oh, that's easy. Well, my earliest memory was the band Chicago. And I remember hearing Saturday in the Park, that song.
Big. Very sad about their... Singer man accidentally shot himself.
Yeah. That was my first memory of hearing music. And I think what happened was, the short story is, I was in the car, in the back seat of the car, and my parents were driving me, and they looked at me through in the back, and I was rocking back and forth in time with the song. So that was the first time they saw me respond, and I had rhythm. So
you were, I was going to say, you were grooving. You know,
at 2 years
I remember a T-Rex song called The Groover. You were the Groover. Now, let me ask you this. This pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
No, and only until I got a drum set.
Okay.
So we didn't have music in the house. No instruments.
Well, let me ask you this.
Musical.
Let me ask you this. What about at school? Were you in the marching band or the choir? Shit like that?
No, none of that. I was all like motivated by myself to play my own instruments, so I never did any of the band stuff because it didn't really interest
me. Yeah, but sometimes
I
just ask you that shit because sometimes you don't have a choice. You're just a fucking kid, and sometimes the schools got rid of their music programs and shit and arts. So that's why I asked that question. So let me ask you this: what was the first record you bought with your own money?
Can I digress for 1 second, though? About the music thing, I did in high school towards the end do a music program out in Long Island, which that was the one art school that I did go to in high school, and I loved it. And it was an art school. So I did do it later on, so I wanted to give like credit to it. It was they called it a Board of Cultural, something, and I forget, but it was a great school. It was a good experience. So that, but it was more music theory, music performance, and music like a college thing, not like a marching band, you know. Anyway, what was your question again?
First record you bought with your own money, please.
First record I bought with my own money was probably Ace Frehley's solo album from Kiss.
And what was the first gig you saw? Live.
That was Kiss, 1979, with Judas Priest at the Nassau Coliseum on Long Island, New York.
Okay. Usually, you know, when I ask about that school shit, it's about you getting on an instrument or something. It's not so much the theory and shit, especially grade school. And
Choir.
I must ask you about after school, not graduating, but in the afternoon. Did you get in that garage band, basement band? Bedroom band sitch?
Yeah, we had my friends were growing up. I had a drum set first. That was the first instrument. So we had, you know.
Well, tell me about that. Tell me about that. Why did you pick drums? Yeah. And why did your parents give in and get you a kit?
Well, yeah, I think all kids want to play drums when they're little. I feel like every kid wants to do that.
Steve, I got to tell you. If I was the czar of schools, you wouldn't graduate unless you learned drums. Because I think that's, especially this racket with the rhythm music. Come on, why be in denial? Anyway, go on.
I felt that, yeah, I mean, I'm lucky enough that I felt like I had it, you know, just I was a natural at having a pocket and having some rhythm, and I loved it. And we had a neighbor that played drums who was about 5 years older than me, and he was my hero. So when I heard him play, I couldn't wait to go outside and peek over the fence, you know. And so I convinced my parents to get me a drum set, and they gave in, and thankfully I thanked them for that. And I loved it. I just loved the drums. I don't know why. I just did. But I loved the guitar as well. But the drums came first for some reason.
Well, you had some buddies that knew how to play. Now, usually you practice at the drummer's house so you don't have to fuck away to build and tear down the kit.
Yeah. Yeah. That was just when I was young, very young, like single digits into like 11 years old maybe. But then we had a little band at, you know, in like the early to mid teens, and that was truly where we began that garage band thing with three of my good friends. One has passed away, sadly, young, but my other one he's still kicking, both of them. One is named Joe or Jello, he's a great guy. And we started young, so we had the garage band. Yeah.
Now what kind of material? Were you writing your own, or were you like me and D Boone and trying to copy off records?
Like you. It was nobody could write anything. So our time was spent playing Van Halen cover songs and Rush, Yes, you know, Duran Duran, that kind of
stuff. You know what's trippy about that? Van Halen started his copying songs.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So maybe it's kind of a stage. But I've had people on the show, especially more younger people. They start writing songs right away. That's one of the true gifts I think the movement gave to young people getting on. You don't have to copy records if you don't want it. It's let the freak flag fly. Yeah. Anyway, if you don't have that, it's hard to know if you don't have that kind of culture going. You know, this was 70s in Pedro. No one we knew, even the best dudes who could play, didn't write their own shit. There was no culture for it. Yeah. So, well, fuck that. Anyway, did this band have a name?
Yeah, it was called Espionage.
Now, did Espionage do any gigs, or was it just a prac band?
No, we did. It took a few years, but we actually played locally. We had a little club up the street.
Can you tell me about the first Espionage gig?
Yeah, it was funny. It was at a club called February's, and it was in a town called Elmont, New York, which was right on the border of the Queens, Long Island border. And it was a biker bar. And on a certain night, I forget what night, it was no alcohol, and we couldn't wait to do it. It was like any other kid. We wanted to play so bad. It was 16 years old, you know, and we just had cover songs. We might have had a couple of originals. I'm actually remembering we may have actually written one or two, but it's foggy. But it was a great experience because it was the local club, and we felt like, you know, we could do this for the rest of our lives. It was a typical story, but we were so happy.
Atypical, because some people's first gigs were nightmares, but you would consider your first Espionage gig a success.
Well, I would say one thing, without tooting my own horn, we were good very young. So I have to say we were good musicians young, and we had an aptitude to play. We were blessed with good ears. And we were as good as we could be at 16, but we were very good. So I just kind of remember tackling like Yes songs at 6, you know, and then play a Van Halen thing or whatever. So I felt like we were confident. That's a good way of putting it. Oh, by the way, I was playing bass.
No, you didn't say that. You said drums, and you didn't tell me how you got on the guitar. So Espionage, Espionage had fucking evolved. Before they even did their first gig.
As a kid, there's lack of bass players where I was living. So I was rocking on my guitar, working hard and loving it and just as good as anybody else. But I got the bass job for some reason. I took the bass.
What, the older guy from next door, did he get on the drums?
We're all the same age, about 16.
No, but you told me there was a cat next door that inspired you that had a drum kit.
Oh yeah, he was. I have an older sister, and he was when I was very little. He was 11 years old. I must have been 6 years old, and he was the first guy that fired me. Yeah.
Okay, then so, who when you went to bass to save the day, who took your place on the drums?
Oh, my friend Steve, who was my oldest friend, and he. The short story of that was we were like he was the brother I never had, and he has the same name as me. Sadly, he passed away young, so we miss him. But he was not a musician as a little kid, but I was, and he always wanted to play, so I sold him the drum set.
Yeah, fucking happening.
And they gave him life there. Like he, you know, not, I didn't give him a life, but I did, yes.
No, but
I was
you gave him the O-word opportunity, not the B-word burden.
Nope, we all got help and generosity from people, you know, and I remember he was thrilled and we formed a band. It was funny, you know.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. So espionage actually started with you on the bass. Okay. And before that, you guys were just jamming. That's when you were a drummer. But that's where you got your good rhythm to work that bass. Look, you gave me this tune, Fatso. Let's listen to it.
Gun runners,
Watford Pedro show, that choking music star with Steve Dawson doing Fatso. And then Guided by Voices, brand new, Meet the Star. Rent Party out of Chicago, Precious Rhinestone, Ace Nez. A Produce, brand new, Big Background. Atavin, featuring Natasha Naramley. This is brand new. And the Proj back on after like 18, 19 years, I think. Mountain Visions. Sprain, brand new. Man Purposes. No, Purposes. Man Proposes. God Disposes. That's a good title. Red Largo out of Berlin with Exodus Transmission 2. And then finally, The Fuzz Haunted with Wet Song. Okay, when you get out of high school, like you went to that, towards the end of high school, you went to that music program and stuff. Did you take music to higher education? What did you do with music after high school?
I kept playing in the bands, and I started playing in New York City by like 19, 20. And I did attempt a local community college, but I lasted one semester. College just wasn't for me. No. So
you continued with the school of life.
Absolutely. I had no choice.
That's all right. All right. Now, you made some kind of like evolution. Some people would say evolution. Some would say de-evolution. From bass to guitar, right? Correct?
Well,
I'm assuming here, so I don't know. So fill me in.
Yeah, well, I continued on with, it's funny, I still played a little bit more of the bass with the band that we had because we were getting a little older, and some people went to college, but were local in New York, so I remember doing shows at CBs. I would play CBGBs, and I'd be on bass, you know? And
Can I ask you what kind of bass you had? I'm a little prejudiced towards bass, so I'm curious. What kind of bass did you work?
Okay, here's my memory of the bass. I think I had a Yamaha bass in the beginning that was borrowed. I didn't own it, but you wind up kind of owning these things, you know? And then I had like this really...
Well, you inherited.
Yeah, let's say that. And I think I had, just to get by after maybe that one disappeared, I don't remember, but I remember buying an Ibanez bass just to get by, and I hated it. No, I like Ibanez, depending on what it is, but I'm not prejudiced towards Ibanez, but the bass was garbage.
What do you think of this aphorism? A poor carpenter blames his tools.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get your word on that.
I'm listening to you. I'm on you. Okay. I'm on to you, Watt. No, it was just like, you know, and I remember...
No, I know exactly what you mean. Because with an instrument, you got to express yourself. And if it ain't feeling right, it seems like it's in the way.
I had to get from A to B, and I bought that, and I remember eventually sold it to a drug dealer.
Well, what was the first song I played by you today? I Gotta Move. You had to move that bass to that drogas proprietor.
I think...
Okay, let me ask you this. The guitar move. I want to know about the guitar move, because when I got to play with you last month, it wasn't you weren't working a bass.
No, and I just want to fit in. Thank you for doing this show, and thanks for asking me, because I love the show, and I really appreciate your support and who you are, and how you really support people that come into your life. So I just want to let you know that right now. I really love it.
You know what? I got to tell you, Steve, it was done to me. So you know what I mean. I got to, like, pay back. I got a debt.
Well, I think it's great. So I just wanted to say thank you. But, yeah, we met at the Whiskey, and I was on guitar. And I started playing guitar for real in my real band. I had a band in New York City called Bad Ass Franklin. And that's about 1993, 94 through about 98, 99. And
you gave me a tune that we're going to play in the third hour called Broadway.
Oh, yeah, right. I forgot I sent that. Yeah, that's the band. And that was me with some of the same guys from, you know, but we finally sort of came into our own and I could be myself on guitar. But we looked outrageous. We wore wigs. I looked like Sly Stone. That's what I used to look like when I would go on stage.
I dug Sly Stone.
I had a big Afro wig and these crazy, wild, colorful clothes, and we were an outrageous New York City band, and that's when I felt like I was kind of coming into my own at 21 years old.
Have you seen videos of him playing? You know, he did a lot of gigs sitting down.
Fly?
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen them all. Yeah, I'm a
Yeah, he does it sitting down, right? It's like, kind of with a cowboy hat on and shit. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I love it.
Last year we lost Cindy, the trumpet player. And just before that, the drummy Italian guy.
I know.
Yeah. So, does this band record? Does this band tour? Does it just do local New York City gigs?
We were more the three states or whatever, the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and we're the band that, you know, everything bombed on that, but the band. It was one of those things. We had some representation. We had a dedicated following, and it's just one of those things. We never got a deal, you know. We did record, because I used to work at a recording studio in Soho called the Magic Shop, which was a kick-ass studio that sadly has closed only about 6-7 years ago. But we used to record at the Magic Shop, and because I worked there, when there was downtime, the owner, Steve Rosenthal, was kind enough to give me free time. So I had the access to a Neve 80 series console for free.
Let me learn about this. How'd you get involved with working at a studio?
Way back. Do you remember a band called Monster Magnet?
Sure.
Yeah, Monster Magnet, Dave Windorf. I had a good friend of mine in my hometown. His name was Juan Garcia, and this is a long, 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 long time ago. But he was a friend who knew, who was working there. He was young, and he was going to school for audio. And I just wanted to get into the studio as soon as possible, about 20, 21 years old. And Juan, my friend back then, got me in, and it was as simple as an internship. So I got hired by this woman named Janet Erb, who I'm still friends with to this day. Janet Erb's father was Donald Erb. I don't know if you were a fan of Donald, but he was like an out there composer who did. He was one of the few people that Frank Zappa name checked. Let's put it like that.
Yeah, so, and Pierre Boulez.
He was, yeah.
Because the Yellow Shark, I know he dedicated to that.
Yeah. But I got into that through an old friend, and I just became an intern, but I was paid. I was a general assistant at some point. Although I knew I was never going to go into audio for a living, I was heading towards being a player. That's why. But the band, Badass Franklins, got to record there a few times, and I was always grateful for that.
And you know what? What I understand about intern, at first they're making the coffee, right? And then they're ending up mixing the album.
Yeah. Yeah. I made really good coffee, and I curled up cables really well.
Right? That's what you do at first, right? It's kind of like a hierarchy kind of thing.
Yeah. But yeah. I worked with amazing people at the Magic Shop, and I got an education.
Well, and also it's learning by doing. So it's not all blackboard. You actually got your hands in it.
That's the best part about what we do, is we're thrown into the fire and we want to be there. And that's how we learn. And I met incredible people. I used to work at Lou Reed. I was 22 years old. I was hanging out with Lou Reed. It was like, you know, it was incredible.
Yeah.
And
I'm a big fan.
I met Al Cooper. I worked with Al Cooper. I worked with incredible producers, Don Dixon, John and Yellow, all these great people.
John and Yellow is an old friend of mine. I know him through Jay Maskus.
Yeah, well, John was with Dinosaur, and he was with, I don't know if you know Mike Johnson.
Sure, he played bass for Jay for a while there.
I loved Mike. Mike was one of my favorite people, I remember. He was always kind to me, and John was so close. We were like a family back then. If you ever talk to John, tell him I said hello. He was a great guy.
I think he's on the other side of the country, but I will.
He is.
Love the man.
He is.
Steve, we're at the end of the first hour. June 28, 2023. Dish and Wap, Pedro Show, special guest Steve Dawson. Hang tight for hour two. June 28, 2023. It's the second hour of the Wap for Pedro Show. Wife for Pedro show. We start off the second hour. Steve Dawson doing Five Monkeys. Chuck Johnson, brand new from Chuck Johnson, Night of the Disappearance. After that, great bass man. You were saying Connecticut, right? I think he's original. Doug Wimbish.
Incredible. Oh, man.
Yeah, Sugar Hill Gang, and then later on, well, God, he got asked to join the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I really look up to him. He's a great cat, too. I think he's helping the Living Color people these days. And this tune from his solo album, this is called Glory. Derek Moneypenny after that with part two of Unjust Intonation. I think Lamont Young there, early John Cale colleague, right, when he came to the U.S. with they got the Just Tonation, the Dream House, right? This tune that's been going on 7-8 years. I heard a couple hours of it. It was sweaty. It was in August. Adam Fulton after that with Iron Giant. Yeah. Adam Fulton, somebody you worked with.
Well, there's a great story about Adam, and if you're okay with me telling it, I could be really brief about it.
Guest holds sway on the Watt from Pedro show.
Can I tell the Adam story quick?
That's what I mean by that, you hold sway.
Hey, man, I'm catching on. Adam was a guitar student of mine, because I always taught guitar, and Adam Fulton... as a young kid.
Oh, yeah,
okay,
we never got,
say,
I got to tell you, Steve, we never got on to why, how you got on guitar, but tell this story first. Tell this story first. Especially since you say you're a fucking guitar teacher.
I'm a teacher. Anyway, Adam was, as a kid, he was basically diagnosed with bipolar, Tourette's, ADHD, anything you could think of. And he was just, you know, life was becoming a little rough. And I became very good friends with his parents. I was his teacher. And somehow Adam Fulton gravitated towards the bass.
Yes.
So everything you hear, once he grabbed the bass, his brain could grasp it. And he connected with the bass. And he wrote all these songs in the vein of, like, Ronnie James Dio, Rainbow. Like, he was a kid 12 years old maybe, who loved that stuff. So basically, flash forward. Years later, I called his parents and him, and I said, I want to record the songs that we worked on in your bedroom that you wrote. So I did all that, but what you're hearing is the writing is Adam.
Okay.
And he was incredible.
I think what you call that condition is like savant, like Rain Man. Remember that movie, Rain Man?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's savant. We say savant.
Yeah, it's probably a French word. It means you're like lame with everything else, almost autistic. But then one thing you're really good on. But let me tell you this. Dee Boone used to volunteer time to play acoustic guitar for autistic kids. And he could get through that wall with music.
I did it. I did it with him. And I did it not only with him, with other kids too. So I every time I always taught guitar since I was 19 years old. So I always worked with kids as well. And kids make me happy because they love the instrument and they love music, and I love passing on that knowledge to them. Nothing makes me happier than teaching sometimes with young kids that are so open and into it. And Adam was one of those kids.
You know what else? They're the next shift. So I'm glad you're invested in it, because we got to let go sooner or later, right? I want to play Wanna Hurt.
Yeah.
No, Want You to Hurt. Okay.
Want You to.
Here we go.
To Thank you. Thank you.
Pedro show. Start that chunk off with Andre Comeau?
Yeah, that's close enough, man.
Maybe a Romanian name, right? Okay. Want You to Hurt. And then after that, brand new from Chinese Herbal Medicine here in the San Fernando Valley, Midlife Crisis. Then Vinnie Golia's got a new project. This is Golia Patrick Shiroishi's been on the show. Incredible sax man. Sakura Skrawazeski, Wedman, and Zappa. This might be a relative, like a great grand cousin or something. I don't know exactly the thing, but it's called Liquid Skirmishes. And then Secrets Street Sex out of Texas with If This Is What It Passes for Living. And finally, Steve Dawson with Sarah. So enlighten us to Andre Comeau.
Andre is a great singer, songwriter based in Los Angeles. And I met him a few years back, but I knew him about 30 years ago peripherally because I don't know if you remember MTV, the very first show they had called The Real World. It was like the first reality show. And Andre was the band. This is about 1992. And I remember his band back then, and they were based out of New York. And I always thought he was cool. And then 30 years later, we wound up meeting. And I play guitar for him, and he's a fantastic writer and a singer. So he's based out here in L.A. And so I play on his records. I play the solos and the leads that you're hearing. So
okay,
he's great.
We're talking guitar. Let's talk about how you got on the fucking
guitar. Oh, yeah.
Because the way I understand it, it went from drums to bass. And then guitar teacher.
Yeah, but I always guitar was it for me. I was just doing that stuff to make a living or try to get in bands. But yes, guitar was really when that Badass Franklin band started. That's when that happened. And then when I moved to New York City for real, that's when I started becoming a session guy and half the income teaching and then the bands and the sessions. That's
when
it started.
Let me ask you, how did you learn? Is it self-taught, autodidact, or did you take lessons or read books or videos or what?
Yeah, both. No videos. I was a natural as a kid, definitely had a rhythm and definitely had an ear for music, and I was definitely a natural. But when I grew up in the early to mid, late 80s, all the 80s was the era of like post Eddie Van Halen, enter Steve Vai and Yngwie Malmsteen. So I wanted to know music more. So I had a great guitar teacher when I was a very young teenager. His name was Mike DiGiacomo, and he was fantastic. So I did learn how to read music and chart and all that stuff. I just wasn't really like a jazz guy, so to speak, you know? So, bit of both, but I'm a natural, you know?
Okay, but I'm glad you gave credit to that man, Mike DiGiacomo.
He was a great guy.
Yeah, because, you know, there's dudes with talent. For example, you can have a great basketball player, but he makes a shitty coach. And maybe not such a good player, but he makes a great coach. Phil Jackson, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there definitely is a skill to that. It's not just having the abilities. It's being able to inspire someone to find their own voice, right? I mean, tell me about your technique you use for you teaching.
I remember him kind of being inspiring only because I think I just connected with him, and he was a fantastic – he was a good conduit for, like, he could pull things out of his students just by, like, he was encouraging, and he was a good man, and he was fun to learn from.
What I meant was, do you learn things that he was using with you, with your own students?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was getting to that. I felt like all of his character rubbed off on me. And I remember teaching things, even when I was teaching very young, I was taking it straight from his books, man.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Okay. Yeah. So he also had books. Okay.
Yeah, I had to take a lot of notes.
Okay. How did you find him?
Oh, we had one of my good friends when I was a kid. A good friend of mine, his name was Eric, and I just remember he had him. I don't know how he had him, but it was local. But he was a traveling guy. He would go to your house, which is what I did eventually. So I used to have a car in New York as well. So I used to drive everywhere and teach. So I took a lot from him.
Ah, that's different because when I was, me and D. Boone, the paradigm used to be, it was the music store that wants to sell guitars and strings so they have lessons in the back. But you actually go to their pads.
I did that first. I did walk 5 or 6 blocks with my guitar to the first music store lessons, and that lasted a couple of years before I found this guy. So when I was 11, 12, 13, I used to, you know, walk in the snow to the music store.
What was your first guitar, Steve?
Say again, sorry?
Your first guitar, what was it?
Oh, man. It was a Toys R Us plastic acoustic. It was from the toy store.
Like fishing line for strings.
Yeah, the action was about 2 inches off the fretboard.
Yeah, right.
It was real easy to play.
You know, whenever you show somebody that when you're a kid, that'll build up your strength, and you're like, you motherfucker. Yeah. We're at the end of the second hour, June 28, 2023, Dish Wap Pedro Show, special guest Steve Dawson. Hang tight for hour 3!
Museum in Amsterdam.
Yeah, me too, several times. 28. June 2023, it's the third hour of the Watch for Pedro Show.
the tar engine room equals soot. Black bubbles in the tar engine room equals soot. Every man reaches for what he reaches and clings to what he clings. But black bubbles in the tar engine room equals soot. This is good, this is good. A streak of light found my hand in the dark, this is good. But black bubbles in the tar engine room equals soot. Black bubbles in the tar engine room, soot. I found oil patches in the base of my sink. Black bubbles in the tar engine room equals soot. Lesson learned. Black bubbles in the tar engine room. Black bubbles in the tar engine room. Black bubbles in the tar engine room. Black bubbles in the tar engine room.
For Pedro show, start off the third hour, Steve Dawson doing Turtle. Son Kevin after that, just Ivan Julian, speaking of New York guitar player, his son, and Cynthia, right, the ma is from the Bush Tetris, and this is, I think he used Roman numeral XIII, so 13 runes, yeah, young people, their own language, right, Bombas Prendon after that. This is a band in the D.C. area, they've been together since, I don't know, late 80s. Recorded 4,000 or 5,000 songs, done like 3-4 gigs. Yeah, trippy. Mm. But they keep putting out stuff, and I dig it. Buzz Brain Breathing. Stefano Pelli after that from Bologna, Italy with Ouroboros. He wrote this, an organ player. He's a guitar man, but an organ player used his composition performed it. The Bloody Mess Rock Circus with the Bluest of the Blue. And finally, Slimbot. With black bubbles in tar engine room equals soot. And I got to tell you, my pop was a machinist mate in the Navy. That's why I came from Virginia to here when I was 9.
Mm.
And what they called the old slang for engine room guys is black gang. And it's probably because what you're describing in this title.
I didn't write the lyrics. A good friend of mine, Jamie Lord, wrote those lyrics. And his mind comes from the same cloth as Don Van Vliet. So you can draw your own conclusion there.
And Howard Berman, if you read the Mike Barnes book on Captain Beefheart. Like, trust us, that ain't fucking the captain's words.
Oh, really?
Everybody thought it was a fake name for tax dodge, but no. Mike Barnes got an interview with this guy. It was a real dude. Captain liked to repurpose, borrow and repurpose things. Anyway, tell me about Slimbot. Is that like a side project or what? It's very interesting.
It was a side project, yeah. After, I mean, the two guys in Slim, it's three people. My friend, myself, this guy Jamie Lord, and his brother Randy Lord. And we've been friends for years. They were in that band, Badass Franklin. And then many years later, many years later, we just wrote and recorded 6 songs maybe at home. And just put it out there and played some local shows. But it didn't really go anywhere. It was just something to do. But we were proud of it. But it was just a one-off EP, so to speak. You know,
and you got the document to prove it.
I still like it.
You know, that's the thing about making recordings. They're kind of like headstones. So even though it might be gone, like, you know, there's some document to live on. Look, one thing that you gave me that we didn't discuss was something called the Fuzz Haunted. Enlighten me, please, Steve.
Same two guys, but it was more of this one of the guys, his name was Randy Lord, and the two of us, probably about 20 years ago, I'd say, we did that as a project. So we recorded a record called The Fuzz Haunted, a real record, about 8-9 songs, and played as a duo. We didn't play as a band. And don't forget, like, this whole time, I'm a session person. I'm in 20 bands at once. I'm making a living doing guitar. So we have now projects, but we're not really gigging, consistently.
But I think that's healthy. Otherwise, there's this disease I discovered comes from that situation called sidemanitis, and they start hating everything because they never get to express themselves.
No, that's not me.
Yeah.
That's not me.
I think at times, life's more about taking turns. So you take direction, then other times you give direction. You know, you collaborate at other times.
Yeah.
You know, life... That whoever wrote those plays, you know, life is a stage and roles and this kind of thing. Why not? Why should things be static? Why can't they be dynamic? I want to play something now, since we've heard so much about Badass Franklin and the people you still continue to play with. Let's listen to Broadway, Big Street in New York City.
Johnny!
Watch for Pedro Show. Last music for this edition. Badass Franklin started off the chunk with Broadway. Telling Steve off air about seeing that over by the Spite and Dabble where it's way up in the sky going towards Yonkers. And trip your mind up because you take a little train ride and you're walking on it. Yeah, trip. 99 letters after that with Honoré. Gary Lee Connor from the Screaming Trees. We lost his brother Van. Beginning of the year.
Yep.
Great bass man. Yeah. Sinister Fran. And finally, Steve Dawson with 90% Mouse. Now,
yeah.
Pedro Mouse is a slang for some dude who comes on the side, like the side mouse, right? Like you get served at a chow pad before somebody else, and they're sneaking over there with the fork. Hey, I wonder what those french fries taste like, you know? Okay, so what do you got planned right now? What are you doing right now, and what is your future plans for music besides teaching, which is a great thing?
My current focus, I'm still playing. The pandemic was, we all got our own story with that. So I'm coming off of that BS. And, but I build these guitars called Calvin guitars, and that's kind of the focus. And they're basically like kind of hot rodded looking Stratocasters, but with my own personalized stamp on them. So that's kind of the focus is the guitars. And, I love them. They're very flashy, and they're named after our dog, Calvin. So that's the focus is that in many ways. But I also have a lot of music that's, like, getting pitched to TVs and TV and film and stuff, and I'm kind of focusing more on that than the touring, you know?
And what about, like, albums or projects like those two brothers that you were playing with?
We're not doing anything anymore, but the last few years, I was in a blues band with a Grammy-nominated blues artist named Janava Magnus, and she's a great singer, and I was doing that for a little while before the pandemic hit, and straight up, kind of traditional, more on the mainstream side of blues, and I was working with a producer named Mark Tanner, who had a bunch of hits, and I was working with him. He had an artist named Scott Howard, and we were just working with stuff. We did some TV stuff and some recordings and some live. We did some stuff with Village Recorders, did a whole shoot there. And lately it's just been local gigs. A lot of my stuff has been local lately.
Let me ask you this. You know, a lot of these things here are credited to Steve Dawson. You record these, you got a home studio?
Yes, I do. We're over here in Studio City.
Okay,
yeah.
Studio City.
how cool.
Well, that's where the Musician Union is now. They moved off of La Brea, right? AFM Local 47. So, are you making a Steve Dawson album, you know, bit by bit? There's no pressure with the home studio, and you don't have to worry about touring and stuff like that. Do you let some kind of creative impulses out by, like, doing that?
I think the closest right now is my SoundCloud. Steve Dawson has got about a dozen songs that are all instrumental, and that's pretty much the album. Like, those have been written and recorded all by myself here. So I'm like, it's not a record, but it is out there, and I love them. I'm proud of them. And that's kind of where my own music is at. I have a whole side of me with the instrumental kind of stuff.
And
that
this
I like
is a studio. Can you play drums?
No, I have. I actually use. I'll either get somebody to play drums for me and record it, or I'll just use some samples and stuff that I have.
But you don't record them at your pad. It's like my pad. I can do everything but drums because I'm in a fucking apartment, right?
No, sir. No drums here.
Yeah. Well, do you still get on the drums?
No.
Wow.
Only at a
when was the last time?
No idea.
You have no idea when you last got on the drums. That was something from your youth, right?
Yeah, the only time I jump on the drums if I'm at a rehearsal from somebody and the drummer leaves the room, then I could jump on the drums.
And you're saying that people can find your music on the internet by going to SoundCloud and searching for Steve Dawson, Dawson.
Yeah, the SoundCloud is good, and then you could do the Instagram for the guitars, which is called Calvin Guitars LA.
But no Steve Dawson website.
There was a stevedawson.net, but that was getting useless, so I shut it down. So pretty much the Steve SoundCloud and I'm on Instagram also, which is Steve Guitar Dawson, but it's Steve GTR Dawson.
You know,
so
I went looking on the internet. There's another musician named Steve Dawson. You know that, right?
Yeah, he's a Canada guy. He's got
right,
a lot more
right, right.
Yeah, I know who he is.
Okay, does he know you?
who knows?
Okay, one time I was playing in Canada in a town outside, about northwest of Toronto called Guelph, a college town. And there was a club called Trasheteria. And this cat, hey, what? I want you to meet somebody. Yeah? Yeah, the owner of the pad I was going to play, right? Trasheteria. So he comes, brings me to meet this guy. He says, Mike Watt, meet Mike Watt, the owner has the same name as I did.
That's funny,
that
man.
That was a trip. So what we got to look forward to then, but you're still doing instrumental stuff?
Yeah, I am. I am.
Okay, so people, check out SoundCloud. I've been there. And in fact, that's where you first heard him on the show. I took some tunes from there, a couple of them, right?
Thank you.
Yeah. And in the meantime, if you're looking for guitars, he's got that going too. And you don't have a website for your lessons. It's word of mouth. People tell each other.
Yeah, and I used to do it so much more in New York because, don't forget, I moved to L.A. only 8 years ago. I waited till I was a lot older. So I've kind of been reestablishing myself. Just my whole life changed a lot. So I have not taught as much here, but I don't have the website for the teaching. It's been a transition. It's a transition.
Sure. I understand. You know, what do we call it? We call it a sea change.
Yeah, I like that.
Thanks for being on the show so much. Come back anytime you want, please.
Thank you.
People, it's been the June 28, 2023 edition of Wap Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.